off after you're all through. The establishment and operation of construction headquarters for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Project in keeping with the best interest of the private sector of the Decatur Fairbanks area. Now, that may be too general. The meeting today was called at the request of several of the business community that still had questions in their mind as to the leasing of possible leasing of Fort Wainwright by Alyeska. So we invited Mr. Elder, Mr. Radiman, to come back to Fairbanks today to try and answer any of the questions that you still have. And we certainly appreciate your coming, and we're sorry we couldn't have a little warmer weather for you today, but last time you were here, you told me you needed some cold weather on the whole road, and part of it was still giving you a problem, so...
We're completely satisfied.
We're working.
Now,
okay, so with that in mind, why... We'll turn the meeting over to Mr. Elder and ask him to give us an overview of things as they are, and then answer questions from you. Mr. Elder?
Thank you, Tom. Well, I don't have anything prepared for the meeting today in the way of any astute statements or really anything to add to what I may have or what I did say the last session when I was in town discussing this problem. And I think we'll probably accomplish more if I simply take any questions you have in respect to this matter or any other for that that we can discuss. We've had a little more leisure perhaps this afternoon than we've been on other occasions when we were together. I can say, of course, that we're still vitally interested in receiving the Army proposal for Wainwright to give us a chance to make a final evaluation. We feel the use of the North Base is completely compatible with our earlier statements in respect to lessening impact from this sizable project we have to administer. We took somewhat of a body blow early in the game on this, and we can all reflect, at least we can reflect on how we might have avoided that, but nevertheless, the circumstances did develop that we found ourselves far behind the eight ball before we even got off the ground, and we've been recovering ever since. We are interested in the support of those people in Fairbanks who agree with our position, and hopefully as a result of our discussion today, I can at least clarify, if not satisfy you, on some of the issues that may be still hanging fire. So, Tom, I think what I'd rather do at this point is just pick it up where anyone wants to start, and we can go from there.
Here's a list that was given to me just prior to the meeting, some questions that some of the people have. It might take a few minutes and just look that over. Carlson?
Charlie, could I ask you to sort of lay the groundwork? You've actually now have just submitted a letter to the Department of Army submitting a proposal to lease these facilities, and you still have to await their reply.
Yes, sir. We have sent to the Army a letter back at the end of January, which said to the Army, we would be interested in using this, and this building on North Post. We had been told prior to that time that the Army was in the position to lease the facilities as opposed to permanent disposal, which is another procedure which was carried out last summer and dropped. As a result of our letter, the Army then distributed their brochure and published the fact that those facilities at North Base were available for leasing. Now, our next step, technically simply to fulfill the government's requirements, we will need to submit a formal answer to the brochure and the ads, which we have not done. It's being prepared, and that will be submitted presumably this week. It has to be submitted before the 28th of this month. At that time, the Army goes into their administrative procedure, which I can't describe to you in detail, but fundamentally they return to us and anyone else interested in the facilities and give us the terms under which they would be leased. At this point in time, we don't know how much rental will be involved and the details of their proposal. Obviously, until we get that, we can't make a final judgment. I don't want to mislead you, however, that it would appear that in a total economy, there is no way you can duplicate those facilities in any reasonably short period of time that will be more attractive than a rental proposal, but we have not seen that. When the Army gives us that information and we confirm the fact that under those terms we are willing to enter into a lease agreement, which presumably would be from 3 to 5 years, then the Army has to go into their further administrative routines of getting approval. This winds up down in D.C. for final approval of this leasing. So that's correct, Mr. Mayor, that at this moment we've only asked, what have you got? They have published what they had. We will answer with what we want, and from there on we're into the fixed routine of the disposal. As I understand it, as we understand it, and the reason we started in this direction in the first place, that insofar as the Army and the people who handle this kind of matter, from their point of view, the facilities are available to lease. From our point of view, we would like to have them. Our problem is we don't know the exact terms under which they will be made available to us, and therefore it would be presumptuous of me to give the final answer that when they come back, we'll take them. Frankly, I don't see how the total economics could work otherwise, but that is the situation.
Mr. Langen?
When they put these out for a bid now, or I think they will have to, by regulations put them out for bid, how are they going to do this? By billing or the total facility? This really worries me, because if they put this out by billing, this town proper isn't going to see too much for a while, because all the businesses which is going to follow you, which you well know is going to, naturally are going to be looking at those buildings. In fact, I know that some of them have been out there looking already. Now, whether that's their right or not, but they have been.
Well, as I understand it, when the Army goes on the market in a situation like that, they are required to not deal with a person or an entity in the first instance. They have to go across the board and say, these facilities are available. Who would like to be considered, or who would like to lease them? So I think it's reason. I have no feel at all as to whether or not they will have other people interested, but that is their procedure. I can tell you this, that of the buildings that were at one time declared excess, this was back when they were up for disposal, that we have named an interest for the purposes I've already described in almost all of them that are available. In our position, of course, will have to be, for the very reasons I've justified are going out in the first place, that we can't just take piecemeal of the things. We need pretty much the whole works. Well, we don't have a viable answer to our problem, which is our desire to get this administrative function under one roof in the camp. The Army, in making their decision, I believe, has a fair amount of latitude, and they must consider all the things you would expect, national interest and so on and so on. However, I must say that is an Army judgment, and I can't predict what they would do. I know what we would do. If they come back and say, well, for whatever the reasons are, you can have half of them that you want, that wouldn't do it for us, because we got to have the whole works. And I was just discussing this point in another direction a little bit ago, that we, as I recall, there were only 8 to 10 buildings of some kind or another described in their brochure that we did not have an interest in, out of the 33 or some such number. So the Army's problem, I suppose, if I could lateral it off to them, when they receive replies, will be one reply that they receive that says, we'll take 33 or nothing type of business. In the event you're not able to give us all we want, then our purpose is defeated for the most part. give or take one or two. I'm not that familiar enough with what we've asked for.
I have an idea. It'll come out building by building. And then, in the meantime, the only way you can get all of it is an all-or-nothing bid.
That will be our position.
I would hope so.
Yes, yes. That we'll have to, otherwise we haven't accomplished what we were trying to do here. Now, I noticed the matter of taxes right on the top of the list, and I'm not really any more qualified to answer that this week than I was 2 weeks ago when I was here. I think I can quickly give you Alyeska's position, providing it doesn't get ground up in Army regulations and government regulations of one kind or another, that we certainly are not going to this location to avoid taxes within the community. That's number one. Secondly, to the extent any services are furnished by the city, it would be our view the city is certainly entitled to compensation for those services. Where I get hung up is that within the mass of government regulations on leasing, I simply can't tell you what their position, what alternates they have in bearing some tax load. Now, I think it's only fair to say that in the event there are no city services required, Alyeska's position would be we owe no taxes either, just for being there.
Well, I would say right down the line, no matter how you term it, if you pay for a service you don't get, it's something we've fought for years, and that's what we call feather bedding. And it's another form of it. And I think any tax is collected, there should be a service performed. I don't think that has come to mind. The main thing is collect the taxes.
Yes.
I kind of worry about the citizens more than I do the taxes. I could retire on the amount of money that is spent on me to protect me every year.
Well, I think a way to leave this, since I would be talking from ignorance to do anything else, is that when we find out the terms and when you find out what the services are that may be required, if any, then we'll all, and the Army has declared their intentions one way or another, we'll all be in a better position to discuss this. And again, as I can tell you that as far as we're concerned, if it requires additional police protection, more patrols, or something of that sort, our view will be we'll work like hell to try to see that the city is not in the hole because of that requirement. Generally speaking, the utility question, I think, turns. Is the government going to sell utilities at what price? Well, I did check that out, and here again, they fundamentally are required by their procedure to charge a going rate for utilities. But that doesn't mean that I don't think that the alternate is there to purchase from the city or the Army, but I can't tell you that for sure. Certainly the telephone service is a for instance, which will require a large amount of it. As nearly as I know, your structure's rigged for us to pay for that as we go in any event, no matter what location we're at. The matter of residential housing, we've said quite a lot of times there's no intent to put family housing on that base. If there is any, it will be completely because we were not able to acquire people who need it. We're not able to acquire it elsewhere. Therefore, I know Mayor Carlson has been very concerned about the school systems, among other things, that any people that will come in on the project for ourselves, and again, at the expense of repeating myself, I say ourselves as Alyeska, Bechtel, and Fluor, the management end of this project, will be, no doubt, almost certainly residing in some point, so they'll be paying their taxes in respect to the school if they have children. We're still, of course, trying to run down some handle on how many children that is.
What has this new lawsuit done to you?
Oh, I'd say it's one more harassment that we live through. I guess, as you know, we really can't, anything in litigation we can't comment on long, but it could be to us a fairly serious disruption of the plans we have going on right now. It basically affects our ability to get the road north of the Yukon completed in 1974, which was a neat trick to start with. But we know if we can't have all of the materials in the right place to start and the equipment, we'll not be able to do that. Which, under our current plan, says that that's a delay in completion.
Yeah. Here? I mean, some of these may be repetitious from the other.
But yeah, fine, John.
Can you explain the Bechtel-Fleur relations to Alyeska and leasing of facilities there?
Yeah, it's probably worth taking a little time to explain this animal because, as I've said before, it's a little bit unique. And I suppose I ought to back up all the way to establish that the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company is owned by 7 major oil companies in varying participation levels. Alyeska exists as a corporation because it has a contract with these 7 oil companies to act as their agent for the design, construction, and operation of this pipeline from Prudhoe to Valdez, which incidentally is a question that someone raised. Alyeska will survive the construction, we hope, and be an operating company from now on in the state of Alaska. It's chartered to do that. Well, when we started designing and engineering the project, it became obvious that our owner companies, the 7 or 8 oil companies, depending on how you throw BP in, could not furnish the extremely heavy load that we found ourselves of management and technical personnel. They're pretty big companies, some of them, but they just do not have the personnel available that are skilled in these areas that can be pulled off for 3, 4, or 5 years to get this job done. So to supplement that need, we went on the market all over the U.S. and finally determined that Fleur and Bechtel Engineering Companies, who are big ones, did have this talent. They wouldn't have to go out on the street and hire people to put on the job for the most part. So we have hired each of those companies as what we call construction management contractors. And all that is the extension of those things that we couldn't generate the capability for ourselves. They have been, now, Bechtel has been given that job on the pipeline and roads portion of the project, and Fleur has been given that job for the Valdez terminal and for the pump stations up and down the line. They are given quite a lot of responsibilities. A lot of responsibilities have been delegated to each of these companies to cause this project to come about. But fundamentally, they are working for us, performing an engineering and management service that we couldn't generate our own capability to do. It's different than taking a contract to build something. That's the important difference. Now, both Bechtel and Fleur will be the direct interface with what we've chosen to call the execution contractors, which are the contractors who will take the prime contracts for the construction pieces of the job. For instance, would be Peter Kiewit or Williams Brothers or Hal Price, large contracting civil and pipeline firms. Bechtel and Fleur personnel will administer those execution contracts, but they will do it with an Alyeska guy sitting right at their side. So that the important concept, I think, it's new to us. It was used in the aerospace a little once in a while, is that these people have a management contract and not a prime contract for construction. In the pipeline and roads part of the project, in a community like yours, you will see many more Bechtel people managing that contract than you will Alyeska, for example. And but we consider them a part of our professional and management group. And finally, I might add that one of the things that counts for this, there just won't be very many sizable lump sum turnkey contracts on this job. There's no one bright enough yet to figure out how to bid one in the first place. So that every dollar that's spent on the project is an Alyeska risk. So I think you can see from that that we're vitally interested in participating quite deeply in the Bechtel and the Fluor business. Now, John, I don't know whether I finally answered your question. No. I spent a hell of a lot of words there, but
I think the thing I was getting at is if you lease the facilities at Fort Wainwright, it would be Alyeska leasing it, and these would only be coming in as your right arm or left arm, and they would not be separate contracts with them in any way, shape, or form.
No, sir.
What about the airstrip?
Tom?
Mr. Elder, you mentioned making an expenditure for housing in the event that you could not find housing in the private sector. Would you also consider making that expenditure in the city of Fairbanks or in this area, off post, making the same expenditure for housing for your personnel? Are you delineating the boundaries and insisting that they be put on post?
Well, no, Tom. As a matter of fact, we do almost anything but not have them there. I think you can understand that that's not a highly desirable situation anyhow. The question is whether or not, and I guess I'm not choosing my words very carefully, but whether Alyeska would subsidize housing in a spot other than that, I have to answer that it would be a very strong possibility, maybe a probability, if we came to that point. But Lord, we're doing everything in the world, as you know, to stay out of the housing business. But, we've got plenty to do without doing what hopefully an area in a community can generate for themselves. But we make no bones about it. It appears that it's a king-size problem for us in the Fairbanks area, as some of our fellows have circulated through town and talked with many of you about this. And it will be important to... We think at least 350 families in this one group, the Alyeska Fluor Bechtel group, who are some of the best engineers and construction managers in the business. We want them on the job. We're going to feel nervous if these top people are not on the job, so therefore it is in our interest to try to generate a little enthusiasm to find them a place to live. There is a group now of Alyeska Fluor and Bechtel people who are working this problem pretty hard right at the moment to identify what the forecast of housing will be, family housing.
I might just add there that last week, Mr. King and I can't remember the other gentleman's name who's working with Alyeska on housing.
But Baker?
Yes.
Hollis Baker.
And a man from Bechtel and Fluor were here, and we met with them concerning housing, and the realtors were represented as well as the banking community. And we want to have another meeting hopefully next week or as soon as some more information can be put together. Next week or the week following us, just what the needs will be, and we want to meet again with the local construction people that are involved in housing and as well as the realtors. So we're trying to define exactly what Alyeska is trying to find exactly what their needs will be. The Alyeska people are more inclined to buy homes where the Bechtel people are more inclined to rent. So we're trying to get a good definition on just what the needs will be and what we can do to meet those needs. John, I believe you had another question. Tom, did that?
I met with the governor last week, and one of the things we discussed was the utilization of the airstrip, how it would be affecting the state bonds that they have and the international airport, and how much use could be made of it. And, of course, I had no answer. This is a discussion. I thought maybe you might touch on that.
Well, chartered all of the personnel needs will be handled through international in respect to moving people, whether it's charter or commercial or whatever the means are, and getting large numbers of people moved back and forth along the pipeline route and out of the state and so on. The use that Wainwright to us is only a matter of convenience for primarily, again, the engineering and management type people who would like to get picked up on that strip right outside the office if they could and fly to Prospect Creek. It's light aircraft operation. I think there may be some plans to... we have commissary supplies, for example, toothpaste and toothpicks to camps. This light type commodity, which lends itself from working from location, one location, it could be that kind of material might be hauled from there. And I say might because that depends, again, on our final arrangements of handling camp logistics. But what there will not be is any appreciable impact on the so-called pipeline traffic, air traffic, that will be operating from international. Another question I believe it's related that turned up was would some aircraft operators be based there? And the answer to that is no, that's not in the plan. So we're looking for a handy place to get picked up on those flights where two, three guys need to come in for a while and go back out to the job and so on.
I understand there is a load limitation.
Yes, sir, there is. I don't know exactly what it is. I know if you load it too much, you've had trouble for a long, long time. So we're not intending to. Although I think the point has been made that a HERC can get into it.
60%, I believe. 60%.
60% on a HERC.
Yeah.
Year-round.
It wasn't stated, Ralph, but it was implied it was a year-round restriction.
But the kind of HERC movements that we're all used to thinking about, to the slope and so on, it's not intended that they be staged through this area.
Well, one of your big deals will be just supplying your camps. And I would imagine that'll come out of HERC. I would think so.
Yeah.
And I don't think they'll be loaded to the maximum weight. Mostly. But they could go out there, I would think.
You want to haul out the trucks?
Mr. Murkowski.
Regarding the use of the railway spur at the North Post, Mr. Have you given any consideration to what?
Well, it's there, and again, I couldn't be very definitive. We have no plans for most of the movements by rail, at least. That I know of, things we may be receiving by rail, we wouldn't put out there in the first place, the heavy stuff. But the use of the rail siding can't be discounted, that we may have some purpose for it.
Chapters?
I think a point that might be thought over a little bit is the your comment regarding the payment of taxes for services. And I just wonder if maybe that shouldn't be cleared up so that there's no misunderstanding of that statement, because it could be construed that you would not favor payment in lieu of taxes where you're making use of government facilities and properties. I think this is one of the things that is thought of.
Well, maybe I could do better if you would describe to me the services that you're worried about.
Well, I think the general consensus is that if your operations were in the community and not on the base, that you would occupy tax. Buildings that are on the tax rolls, and this would generate taxes to the community. To move out to Fort Wainwright, then you would, occupy government facilities. And I've been under the impression, I think many people in the community have, that there's no objection to, for example, of a payment to the community or to the local business. government entities in lieu of taxes that you would have out there on the base. I'm not sure I'll make myself to the point that's a concern.
Let me try it. If we go to the base and we are not using any city services, I think it would be my personal view that we would not pay in lieu of taxes. I can't state that as an Alyeska view because I don't have all the Alyeska guys here right now. But the presumption that we would have paid taxes if we would have gone somewhere else, I guess, is one you could make. But I don't know who we'd pay them to because I would think it's a fair statement that for the installation and the things we want to do, they would not be in within the city limits, for example.
Fort Wainwright.
If we built, if we didn't occupy, the taxes that we would pay otherwise might be to someone, but it wouldn't be to the city because we've got no place to go with this kind of an installation within the city.
Mr. Micklin, I believe he had a point.
Any impact on a community does necessarily become related to the tax burden on the community. For example, the requirement of more schools, for example, because of the influx of population. Okay, that's one service that would have to be dealt with. The tax debt goes on, Mr. Elder. When the industry moves off, the buildings are there. They're created for at a high peak of population, and when the drift off the population goes, that burden is still there, and the impact is still left for the people left in the community. All your public safety, for example, there is an impact on that, the requirement of beefing up of public safety, whatever it is, police, fire, that type of thing. So there are, just adding people into the community creates that type of impact, and tax dollars have to support that. That's what we are.
Yes, I understand that, and I was simply trying to sort out what are the services that would go begging. I'm on sound ground when I say that to the extent there is a service provided, and we were on Wainwright, that we would look favorably at some manner to see that y'all didn't come out short on it. I can't describe the mechanics yet on how this might be accomplished, but... If Chief Sundberg has got a hell of a problem because we went out there, I think we're perfectly willing to recognize that in some manner.
I just wanted to make sure that it was clear so that it wouldn't be interpreted arbitrarily that
yes.
You were not considering the other angles.
No. As I say, we're not going out there to evade taxes.
No. Mayor Carlson?
I just want a little more clarification. Under federal law, any private enterprise on federal land pays the local tax, and it makes a payment on a leasehold interest in federal land. For example, the Alaska Railroad Area, International Airport are all subject to ad valorem tax. With the buildings at Fort Wainwright being owned by the Army, I don't know whether this is applicable or not. It's a possibility of it. Now, when you say what services rendered, this list that you have in front that I put together today, and it's something, some of it involves you, some of it don't, but some of the questions that we have to in-house discuss with the city and the borough, and like, for example, the animal control, and recreation, library service, transportation, which is, of course, that gets into public transportation, but the other three would be borough, and, for example, fire protection, police protection. One discussion on police protection that anything within the building would be under the city police jurisdiction. Anything outside the building would be military. Ambulance hospital was one question as to the uniform building codes, if you had to meet this and had to be inspected by the city. So there is a possibility of services performed by the city or the borough, you know, that would be
right.
Burden on the city. And these are things that we have to sort of, I think, discuss the military and the civilian and the government entities to see how they intertwine here and how much is going to be expected of the city. One thing that I hadn't thought of when I talked with the Corps of Engineers today was the access roads. Would there be any responsibility on government to maintain any roads? And this is something the military probably would be doing that. But. So there may be things that will touch, and it will be a responsibility of local government, which I feel that you people would not object to any type of a tax in this area.
We would not object in the event the government came to us and said, here's your bill plus your taxes, whatever that arrangement might be. What I personally can't speculate is what is the government's procedure, and, you know, anytime you get in the government, you're looking 14 pages of books to find out whether you can or can't, and you have to manipulate your way around to accomplish your purpose sometimes.
What John, I think, means is when you get the show on the road, Mr. Elder, and then expenses seem to come into the city, and the tax, there are no taxes per se, and Fairbanks wouldn't want you to pay taxes if they weren't due Fairbanks. But he's saying if we suddenly get a lot of roads to keep up and a lot of kids to take care of, not this year, but next year, are you all taking that into consideration?
Well, I think the time to answer that is when we have a government proposal that we all can look at and find out what services are going to be required by the community. And there's one thing for sure, at that point in time, Alyeska will be in a position to make a commitment or give our view more specifically than I can right now.
I might just add that this has been done, payment in lieu of taxes, before in the state of Alaska, particularly in the Kenai Peninsula, when the industry came in down there with the Collier plant, the LNG plant. At that time, the state had a tax incentive program, and the industry saw fit itself to negotiate with the borough and the local governments and agree upon certain taxes in lieu of. It covered the school impact, the roads, many, many things. And of course, they knew what they were dealing with then specifically in this case.
Well, yes, and I certainly, that's an obvious thing to do, and then that just has to be one more thing we grind into our judgment at that time.
Walk in good faith.
We try to.
Not so good.
Okay.
In all honesty, when you sign your contract with the government, I don't think it'll be any different than any other one. It'll say no taxes in your price, so that it will have to be accepted. Deal, because I don't think there's any way for this community or the state to make a deal with the federal government for them to collect more. I don't know. Maybe they can make up some new machinery.
Well, quite frankly, I'm not. The only time I've been around with government disposal was a disposal, and I'm not, certainly not myself familiar with what their position on leasing is. They don't do a whole lot of it, I don't think. But I can assure you that the point is well taken. We understand the problem. We're not trying to throw an impact on the school, and the best thing we can do on that is see what our proposal is from the government, and at the same time see where we're still putting some drain on the community and work the problem from there. The one thing so far I've been impressed with the project, of course, is that we have no shortage of paying taxes. At some point, we're kind of interested in some inflow instead of outgo. I understand that doesn't do too much good for individual communities, but I can tell you we're impressed in total.
Chaplain, do you have another question?
I was going to ask about the construction camp. Is this going to be a regular construction camp, just like the others that you would have out on the line?
Well, that's a good question. That, of course, its purpose is the same. I think it would be naive to assume that it would run the same, the camp rules. But the animal control, for example, would become a piece of our camp rules, and which I might say on the pipeline camps, at least if we know about it, there's not going to be any for a lot of reasons. And so far as I know, we could enforce the same thing at Wainwright. In fact, I know we could, within our limits to enforce. The same way about the security of the facilities themselves, we're prepared, of course, to provide that security ourselves. We're going to have to do it in the other big camps. We don't have many people to call on at Prospect Creek. Now, violation of a state or city or federal law, of course, is something else again. We're not policemen, and that will have to come under the troopers for that administration. But keeping people out and enforcing camp rules and keeping reasonable order in the camp and so on, we'll be doing that ourselves. And it could be done at Wainwright, so that at least in that sense, it may relieve the chief of some problems he may visualize.
If I remember adding up right, you talk about 1,100 man camp, and then plus about 350 people, which would be in trenches, would be kind of clearing that.
There would be bunks for 300 or 350, yes.
In other words, that makes a total of about 1,400 men. I've been around construction people all my life, and it honestly worries me a little bit that being that close to town, because I can, there's a lot of things that happen, which you well know. And if 400 or 500 of them decided that somebody downtown didn't quite do right, why?
Of course, I have great faith in your law enforcement and the city of Fairbanks in that respect. I really do.
Jim, it doesn't worry me at all.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, certainly when you put that many people together, you've got problems. I, of course, and I think you would agree too, they're far from being bums, most of them.
Were you there?
That's more like so.
Mr. Poland?
Mr. Elder, I understand the management group, Alyeska Pure, will be causing 350 families to move into this area. And of course, naturally, they'll be looking for homes. And quite frankly, there aren't 350 homes available here. It'd be hard to find one. When is it that you will cause these people to come in?
Would it be
the spring? Or?
Well, we've always, yes, but not necessarily the families. This is why we're trying to work the problem real hard right now, that it may be that we will have to lean on these people, or we'll just have to say, forget about moving your family in July and so on, but here's what we know about what's going to happen in October, and try to phase them in that way. And that's the purpose of this group that Tom mentioned, that are working literally every day on that problem to try to define it, because if we need to make rules for these people coming up, we have to start right now.
Yes, sir. These people will be administrative types, won't they? And as I understand it, they will plan to be here for a period of 3 to 5 years, which brings up the question in my mind, is anyone who is coming in here to be here for a 3 to 5 year period going to be at all willing to assume a 20 or 30 year mortgage on a house which they might not be able to sell after they've finished their mission here?
Well, that's the judgment they'll have to make along with the banks, but I understand. Right. I don't think there's that much speculation in it personally, but I would be the last one to do your business for you. I've said at earlier meetings, I think for better or for worse, that this city is going to be, quote, impacted from now on. Now, not necessarily from our project, but from all of the development. It would have been impacted without us. Lord, you've been growing, and certainly the state has. So the risk of purchasing a house, this of course explains why particularly Bechtel and Fleur are inclined to say, we don't want to do that, we want to rent. Well, all that does is shift the risk to somebody else. So I think we'll just have to, we're vitally interested in providing good places for these people to live, because we want them to bring their family. We don't want a guy coming up here for 3 years without his family. In fact, we couldn't get the best ones under those circumstances anyhow. And our desire is to get these top-notch guys, and right now we've got them nailed, to come on this project and stay with it and move it and get it done right. And that's why we're vitally interested in having them a place to stop off. Now, as a practical matter, even if we build houses or sell the whole works, there wouldn't be that kind of housing, 350 by the end of the year. But as I recall, we're looking at 100 to 150 families in 74 or something in that order.
350 by 75.
And then next year is the peak year. So what we're trying to do is tell these guys down there, okay, may not be here right now, but you come on the job and we'll keep you caught up. And here's what we think is going to happen by October. That's what we'd like to tell them.
And in fact, sir, you really are encouraging the local builders and bankers to gear up and build some houses.
We're doing our best. The judgment will finally be theirs and yours and the community's.
Al, I might just comment. We had indications in a survey we took of approximately 100 new homes to be built, plans now to be built this coming year. It's slightly less than 100. Wasn't that correct, Wally? Slightly less than 100 new homes planned as of now this coming year.
How many are actually available in the community right now?
I think the latest survey was somewhere around 50.
There's one more this morning, so that's 51.
51 now? Gee, I got a call. I was trying to make it 52.
Tom?
Yes, John?
When did you say those 100 homes would be available by the end of the year or during?
Hopefully, the best information we could come up with, that there are plans now or by local people to build approximately 100 homes to be completed this fall. Now there are some apartment projects, but I can't tell you what those are at this point. But we will have a meeting as soon as your people are ready again, and we'll get the realtors and the local construction people, and we'll have a meeting again and see if we can't get a good handle on it.
Which is, I understand it, is to be within the next couple of weeks.
Next couple of weeks, right. Mayor Gillum, I see you're here. Do you like to come up here and join us, or?
All right.
You're comfortable? Okay. Are there other questions?
One comment that if anyone, the Corps of Engineers put out the request for proposal. They're working for an agent for the Department of the Army, so if anyone has any strong feelings of what may or should be included in a lease, should be in contact with the Department of the Army more so than the Corps of Engineers in Anchorage.
Any
There have been reports that Alyeska has awarded a contract to Alaska Sales and Service in Anchorage for 116 trucks, and that auto and truck dealers in Fairbanks were not allowed an opportunity to bid on this. I'd like to ask if you could confirm or deny that report, and then explain if Fairbanks dealers were not allowed an opportunity to bid, why they were not.
Well, I've heard the question asked before, and I'm not through our massive investigation of whether that's a fact, but if it was, it was pure oversight. That's the status of the question. I might say that Mayor Gillum asked me the same question a week ago, and Mr. Mayor, I don't have the facts yet. It's our intent to be certain that we give local business people an opportunity to participate and bid in this type of equipment. If we missed on this one, it was an oversight. Perhaps we were lulled to sleep by the fact that a large amount of the construction equipment was placed in such a way that the advantage came to the city of Fairbanks, although that would not have had any impact on missing the automobile dealers.
And And again, not to be repetitive, but could you explain in more detail Alyeska's position now that the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation has filed suit against Alyeska? What will this do to their plans on supply and building the road?
Well, I've already said that we don't want to discuss in any detail a matter that's in litigation or discuss the merits of the case. If, in fact, we are enjoined from using the Hickel Highway, which has at least historically been a state highway, it will have a serious impact on our ability to complete the road north of the Yukon in 1974. If we're not able to complete the road in 1974, it has an impact on our finishing date of the project. Is that all you had on your list?
You're doing pretty good. Are there any other questions or comments?
Let me talk about this automobile thing. I'm sorry I haven't ferreted out the answer yet. When the construction management people arrive in Fairbanks, which is in effect right about now, I think there's some up taking a look at the north end of the pipeline route like that. Whether we're going to be able to stop them on their way back to San Francisco, I don't know. But these management people will be mobilizing in here right away, providing we don't get any real hang-up on the project again. And when they're here, it'll be much more convenient. We'll act in a much more logical manner in handling these matters of local interest in respect to supply and so on. All of us have been a long ways away, and we drop a stitch out, and I suspect that's what we did, although I don't know. But as soon as these groups are established, the project management people in Fairbanks, which they will be shortly, there will be a more obvious and logical channel for all of the business people to communicate with the project.
I don't know why I single out automobiles, because I think we could go right down the list, and it's a matter of evaluation by your management contract. I think that's what it ends up.
Well, we don't intend to be patsies to anybody. But I think I can say with all certainty that we have a policy which says that not only Fairbanks, but the state of Alaska is going to participate in this project just as much as it economically is feasible to do. Now, there are many small contractors in the state, in Fairbanks, I'm sure, who will ultimately be ground in as they're getting on the register. They're going to be a piece of this business if they can perform and the capabilities to perform. But
I'll answer that one.
Yeah.
A lot of the contractors in Fairbanks, it is not, and this sounds absolutely stupid, but it is not the so much. We're going to have more state work and more Corps of Engineer work and more airports than we've ever had before to build, but it's the excitement that many of the contractors who are not multi-million-dollar contractors believe that they have some better approaches or at least some interesting approaches that have been up in the Arctic, and they would like to have just the excitement of knowing how they can enter plans or suggest different ways of doing things for the excitement of being a part of the pipeline project. And it's not so much being ground in to do a portion of the work as it is that some of their ideas will be filtered through the minds of management and perhaps be of use, and that they will have the excitement of having some of their ideas about the Arctic used. And how do you do that? Wait till the management people get here?
Well, that would be a big long step in the right direction.
Good.
Now, I can appreciate that, and
I mean,
hope we take advantage of it.
But they're waiting, but they want the new ideas.
It's been a new experience for everyone connected with this project before, that there has not been a $4 billion project done even one time. So we're grabbing for leather most of the time right now.
Has anybody ever tried? So many of us know these native people individually, and they're in our homes, and we're in their homes and whatnot, and it bothers people here that these things strike before anybody knows about it and could go in. And for instance, I remember when Ed Well bounced that 3 or 4 days with a panty accident out of 2 big paths. And if somebody had been up there, I believe, I believe that, you may say it's naive, but I believe that some of these things could be solved where you're not stopped dead. And as you said the other day, well, we'll just let them go somewhere else. You can't go somewhere else when the pass is shut. And I believe that if we knew some of these things in Fairbanks ahead of time, that there's at least 50 people that could negotiate or talk with them or whatnot and keep these things from, especially with the Pixon and these people. I believe we could help you. And I'm not talking about an editor or we, I'm just talking about people at the university, people everywhere that know them very well.
Yes, sir.
Let me add to that. Okay. I just might make the point that if there's that kind of help available, it's not too late. Yeah.
Sir?
As I understand it, all your speculative floral people are management personnel which are coming in, right?
Yes, sir.
I probably asked a quite personal question, but do you feel construction personnel who have never handled this type of material which we have in this country, which is quite, well, unique in its own way, and probably being in construction a little bit, I've seen it happen a few times, probably, do you feel these people are fully qualified to handle the adverse conditions we have up here compared to what they have, as we refer to, outside?
Well, they're not
in this area. The construction contractors, the execution contractors, we call them, have not been selected. There are a number of them who have done a lot of pipeline in Arctic conditions. I don't know whether they'll be on the job. Presumably they will. We have an award-winning contract.
In other words, just be perhaps the high management personnel, and then as you would call your working personnel, would be as many as possible selected from the local area.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That the people who are going to cause this thing to be built and built right are not even on the job yet. The people we have on now are the engineers, the people who are used to managing large projects all over the world. May not be Arctic, but there's Jimmy Lever, who's the project manager for Bechtel, spent a good many years in the Middle East. Now, the problems are different, but I can tell you that some of them are just as difficult. So that they've got the skill in managing the logistics of getting everything at the right place at the right time is a job all of itself, and you don't have to be north of Anchorage to be an expert in that. The amount of time and the equipment it takes is something else again. But this was a big, tremendous job that's only now getting down to a manageable job of how do we get everything we need at the right place at the right time. This is really what Bechtel has been doing up to now, by and large, is the logistics planning for the project. When we get out on the right-of-way, and it's a question of how do you treat a D9 carefully enough to keep it out there all the time? That's jobs with skills which are not even on the job yet, but presumably or will come through the execution contractors. Yes, sir?
It seems to me very unique features about this construction, and one that none of us know very much about is the so-called third-party contractor. Looks as if at times we'd have about three inspectors for everybody that's doing any work. How in the world is this fit in? What do you see? I know this is not party or responsibility at all, but what sort of an impact is that going to make on a local community? What
Well, Dr. Wood is referring to the third-party contractor that was hired by the Department of Interior specifically. And this is kind of a long story, but if you'll bear with me, I think as you know, we have had to prove in great detail every inch of the engineering on this project over the last 3 years. The fact that permafrost will melt under certain conditions isn't enough. We have to say how fast, how far, and how deep. A great many technical details were involved in the criteria of building the line to certain standards of safety. With the government participation all the way, U.S. Engineers, Menlo Park Bunch, USGS, and so on. Over that period of time, between ourselves, Alyeska, and the government, we have great detailed criteria of how this line will be built, stress analysis, and so on. Now, it's one thing to agree what it is, and it's the second thing to build it in there. So the government said, okay, you've proved this is a way it can be built, and these criteria are okay, but now we're going to see that you do it that way. And after some negotiation, the government and ourselves agreed that if that we would accept, we would both accept a third-party review of our design and the inspection of the installation. And that accounts for the firm that the government has contracted with called MRI. Yeah. Who in turn joined with a couple other outfits, who put together a group of people, and I honestly can't tell you how many. I would assume it's 100, 150 type thing, possibly, who will review all of our design and see and assure the government that we are installing this project the way we said we would, and if we said, if the permafrost is got this much ice in it, we do one thing. If it has this much, we do something else. They're there to see we do it that way. It will stack inspection. We've got, as you say, a third party involved. Now, what that'll do on in respect to Fairbanks, presumably some of these people will be based up here, but I honestly can't. I don't have any measure. It won't be any great big bunch, I hope. We're paying for it all again.
Now, one question that came to mind when you assured me that if the construction industry and housing were enough housing to handle these people, that after a five-year period, that there'd be no problem in the aftermarket on these houses, then it should follow also that the schools and other facilities should be built as well, because if there's going to be people in these houses, then there would also be need for
Well, I've got, if I say there's going to be growth, then I guess I've said there's going to be growth in the schools, too. I think the mistake that will be made is hanging too much on the five-year period, our project in the five-year period, which I've said pretty continually. There's lots of other things going on here besides our project. And my personal belief is that Fairbanks is going to have a steady and a fairly sharp growth, but I'd be the last one to advise a school district to cover the next 3 years and build in wasted facilities.
So the whole thing bottles this one.
Well, welcome, friend. I've been around a couple of years, and I'm still boggled.
Sir, in response to your question, when the Fluor and Bechtel people were here last week, they both indicated a very strong desire to hire local people. Even to be some of their management people. They don't know what the availability is for this type of expertise in the Alaska market. But if it's available, they certainly, was indicated to us last week that they would certainly be in favor of hiring them. They don't want to draw away from existing firms and hurt them, but...
Personally, in one sense to me, and I've offered this to the schools, but a few items, my personal opinion would be not to gear too high on schooling right now, because at the end of 5 years, it'd be like Donna Keene, it'd be a kind of stagnated situation. and local people, and I'm probably one who might stay in here the rest of my life and paying a hell of a high tax or something that may not be utilized fully for many years to come. And if it's something that's going to be sitting quiet, if we have a, say, a 400-room school and 50 rooms are sitting stagnant, well, that's kind of wasting your money in one sense after so many years. This is neither here nor there. This is something that should be brought up to the city council and so on. I don't know. But just the reason I've asked a few questions, and I'm kind of a little bit lost at the present time, like you say.
I think we all are.
But also, I haven't heard of any Bechtel and Floral advertising for any local help by of any sort so far that I know of through any sources, even through our local union.
I'm not aware of any either. They're trying to assess at this point just what the availability
it's
may
just
be.
Exploratory now, no.
That's correct.
I'd like Mr. Elder to expand a little bit on the problem in Anaktuvik Pass and how much, this will stop your project for the season of 1974 if you don't get the equipment over the when it's frozen, right?
No, don't misunderstand me. It will not stop us for the season. It will prevent us from getting primarily road equipment north of the pass that... if it's not there by March or April, we've got to wait a year to get it in.
Well, we know that. All of us in here know that. That's why I'm asking you to expand on that. But that's a third of the road, about.
I really don't recall. It's 25%, maybe. Because we can come north from Prudhoe a little bit. There's no equipment up on that end, is there
that's
a problem?
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
But what, is there something in... people in this area could do, or...
Well, I was simply saying that, I don't want to discuss the merits of the claim that's made, because there's been a case filed which the merits are questionable, in my opinion, but nevertheless it's filed, and a federal court has been asked to enjoin us from passing through here. That's where it stands legally, and of course we'll go to work legally and work our side of it here. But if the injunction is issued, then we simply can't take the equipment that's currently being staged right through Fairbanks here to go on up, and we're going to be short. Mm-hmm. So a piece of the road won't get worked on the schedule we now have set out, and it'll be left over for another year, and that's going to make us rearrange the whole shebang with a net result of a loss in time.
Does this seem similar to you to the other petitions that are being filed by Native groups? For example, the road from Bettles to the Winter Hall Road, they're opposing that. They're opposed to any other cross...
I don't know enough about that to give you a good answer. We approached the problem on the basis that the Hickle Highway... is a state road, and it's open, it's owned by the state, and they have a right-of-way. The claim, of course, is that's not so, and that's what's making the horse race. We're using the same piece that has been used. We wanted to use the same piece that has been used before, of course. Yes, sir?
I believe that if you dug far enough, you can find that more or less been used since about 1918 as a cattle race, minor.
Now, I might say also, it wasn't that we just went plowing through there. We have talked to the natives.
I didn't say that. I just said that there's so much help Fairbanks could give you. For instance, Mike Bugman, who was just talking to you. They're one couple that have always been up in that area, and they know everybody. And we know everybody, and I suppose at least 100 people in Fairbanks do, and you can reason with them. And I just merely said it when Tom whacked me off there, that if these things that are going to come up, if people knew about it, Jim Dalton or some of these people probably could go in and because it's just a few people, you know, and they all are known well here. A lot of them, you know, we've participated. They've all worked for us one time or another, and I just believe that there's a way to get to them if it was anticipated. But I'm not offering you advice, Mr. Elder. I'm just saying that there is lots of help here for you.
Well, we appreciate it, and I suppose this isn't the last time that we'll have this kind of a question.
In fact, Altuvik Pass enjoyed, I believe, that Mike was there when the first equipment went through and took those pictures, didn't you, Mike? And,
no, not 50 years.
They had a marvelous time.
1918?
Oh, when Al Yes went up. Yeah.
Okay. Well, are there other questions? I didn't mean to whack you off.
No,
Tom,
I
have one. I just like, maybe it's not even a fair question, but I'd like to ask Mr. Elder, do you feel more comfortable this trip than you did before about occupying North Coast of Wyoming?
Yes, we've had a very... If we hadn't got such a hell of a lick in the first instance, I don't think it would have been all this big a deal. Yes, I do.
I think the community behind you, even though you didn't buy your
automobile, is a and he's a big GMC salesman, so yeah. You got good support.
Well, I'll certainly be available anytime. I don't recall whether I mentioned this before, but of course I've got a little bit unique position in the project. I'm the guy that stays when everybody else is gone. So I'll be here for you to beat on after they've left, too. God willing.
Won't some of the Alyeska people that come here be here permanently?
Yes, they will.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was a point I thought should have been made earlier when Mr. Poland asked his question.
I just wonder if you have made any or given any thought to pursuing this clearinghouse idea in Fairbanks. For example, touching base with the mayor, with the borough mayor, the chamber, and perhaps some of these skirmishes could be avoided.
Well, hopefully, yes. I don't know. Personally, I don't see any particular reason to formalize it. I certainly intend myself to be around. I make it a point to be. And I'll be sort of the guy, as I say, that'll be swinging. We've got our project, first place, we're just winding up down the lower 48 on engineering design, a lot of the contract details. Peter DeMay, the Alyeska vice president, the project manager, will be in the next week. And he's going to have his hands full managing the logistics and so on. So I'm kind of the guy that's available when you people want to talk, and or anyone for that matter. It's, as I say, I can assure you that I'm quite aware of any commitments we make or statements we make, because I've got to be here after some of those guys are gone. So they think the government is mean to them once in a while. They're going to have to wait to hear me complain at them.
Well, I think that was a concern, that you'd still be around when some of these things didn't come to pass.
Maybe. Well, I can, as I say, you're always subject to getting fired, I hope. Just as a matter of principle, but I, at this point in time, certainly intend to be, so I hope our post-mortems are pleasant.
It'd be terrible to build a 12-billion pipeline and not be here to see it.
Well, in all honesty, I don't think there's anyone in this room has the capabilities of imagining what is going to happen. I know I've seen what has happened in Texas. I've seen what's happened over other things, something like this, when even the shipyard needs. And it's hard to imagine the overall effect. And it goes on for years. It isn't just during the term of this country.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to thank you for coming up.
Yes.
Thank you, John.